picture this. You're sitting in a church pew on a standard Sunday evening. You have just finished listening to the most ordinary grounding announcements imaginable.
Right.
Someone reminds the room about Wednesday stash night. The congregation playfully teases a guy named Mike about stepping up to volunteer while his wife, Sally, heads off to Brazil on a mission trip.
Mm-hmm.
You bow your head, and the room prays for Margaret's hip recovery and for a family who just put an offer on their dad's house and, well, they desperately need an answer by Tuesday. It is the very definition of local everyday life.
It really is.
But then, in the exact same breath, the scope of the prayers pivots abruptly. Suddenly, the congregation is praying for deployed troops, for safety amidst escalating situations involving Israel and Iran, and for a swift end to international unrest.
Right, a massive shift.
That sudden jarring contrast between Margaret's hip and global warfare is exactly what we are exploring today.
It is a striking juxtaposition, and it sets the stage perfectly for our discussion. We are examining a highly specific document today, a transcript from a Sunday night service at a church called New Life Dunson.
Right, from March 22nd, 2026.
Exactly. The lesson is titled The Fall of the World, delivered by a speaker identified as Brother Steve. And that seamless transition you just described, from praying for a real estate transaction to praying about international war, is the foundational context for everything that follows in his message.
We're going to examine how this specific congregation uses ancient apocalyptic texts, primarily from the books of Daniel and Revelation, to interpret, structure, and ultimately explain their current global anxieties.
Because, you know, the moment those prayers for the military conclude, Brother Steve launches directly into his central theme.
Which is the prophesied arrival of a literal global dictator. He anchors his entire worldview in the belief that current geopolitical events are not random instances of chaos, but are actually leading toward a highly specific predetermined conclusion.
Which is a profound way to process the nightly news. Brother Steve is not just offering spiritual encouragement, he is providing a rigid interpretive framework. He spends the bulk of this lesson constructing a remarkably detailed profile of this coming dictator, a figure traditionally known as the Antichrist.
And his methodology for building this profile is fascinating.
It is. He does not read a single continuous narrative. Instead, he treats the biblical canon like a massive, interconnected puzzle.
Watching him build this profile feels very much like watching a detective compile a composite sketch of a primary suspect.
Yeah.
I mean, he pulls fragments from different eyewitness accounts scattered across centuries of text.
Right.
You have the book of Daniel from the Old Testament. You have Paul's letters to the Thessalonians. You have the book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And Brother Steve synthesizes these disparate accounts to build a single unified profile. It naturally raises the question, you know, how exactly does he connect these ancient dots?
Well, he begins the composite sketch by listing the specific aliases or titles assigned to this figure. The very first identifier he pulls is from the book of Daniel, chapter 7 and 8. He introduces a title of the Little Horn.
Describing a ruler who starts small but eventually uproots other established leaders.
Exactly. And from there, he moves from political strategy to a literal physical description. He calls him the king of the angry face, referencing a verse that states this king will arise having fierce features.
What is incredible here is that Brother Steve actually pauses the lesson to ask the congregation what fierce features means to them in practical terms.
Right. He makes it interactive.
He does. You hear the room interact, agreeing that it means a scary, intimidating look. Brother Steve even suggests that this dictator is going to look mean, comparing his demeanor to a bulldog. It is a very vivid, visceral detail to hand to an audience trying to visualize the end of the world.
It grounds the ancient text in an immediately recognizable image. But beyond his physical appearance, Brother Steve moves to the New Testament, specifically 2 Thessalonians, to add another layer to this composite sketch.
Right.
He introduces the title The Man of Lawlessness, or The Man of Sin, and he is very careful to explain the mechanics of what lawlessness actually means in this specific theological framework.
He clarifies that this is not just a petty criminal who breaks minor rules, right?
Absolutely not. This is a ruler who fundamentally wants to alter the fabric of society.
Because he links that Thessalonians passage right back to Daniel, pointing out that this figure intends to change the times and the laws.
Precisely. The ambition here is to rewrite human history and completely dismantle any societal structure that aligns with God's original plan.
Which brings us to the fourth title he introduces. And this is where the transcript reveals a truly fascinating theological technicality. Brother Steve notes that this figure is also called the Son of Perdition. Now, if you are familiar with biblical text, that specific title might ring a bell because it's the exact same title Jesus used to describe Judas Iscariot.
And Brother Steve knows his audience will make that connection. He anticipates it. He points out that because of this shared title, there are circulating theories within certain theological circles that the Antichrist will literally be a resurrected Judas.
I love how he handles this moment because he explicitly shoots that theory down.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very distinct moment of boundary setting for his congregation.
Mm-hmm.
He tells them about a character analysis he wrote during his time at what the transcript records as Whale Baptist University, which is almost certainly a transcription error for Whale and Baptist University.
Right, but it adds a wonderful, authentic quirk to the document.
It really does. In this analysis, he concluded there is zero biblical or academic precedent for a human being going to hell and later being resurrected to rule the earth. He states, quite bluntly, that when Judas died, Judas was done.
Exactly. So, while they share the title, Son of Perdition, which Brother Steve translates for the room as Son of Hell, they are entirely separate entities.
That boundary setting is crucial, I think.
It is, because it demonstrates that Brother Steve is not just accepting every sensational theory about the end times. He is presenting himself as a rigorous textual analyst. So to summarize the sketch so far, he has given the congregation a profile of a man who is fierce in appearance, completely lawless, empowered by the kingdom of darkness, and definitively destined for destruction.
But a composite sketch is not just about a personality profile. To be useful, you need a location.
Right. And Brother Steve spends a significant portion of his lesson establishing a highly specific geographic and political origin story for this ruler.
Because this composite sketch of a terrifying individual naturally raises the question, where does someone with that much power actually come from? Brother Steve does not just give him a personality, he gives him a very specific zip code.
Let's look at the geopolitics of prophecy as presented in this room. He claims that the Antichrist will arise from a 10-member confederacy and will actively subdue three of those kings to consolidate his absolute power.
And this is where the hermeneutics, the method of interpretation, become incredibly intricate.
They really do. He references Daniel chapter 9, verse 26, which speaks of the prince who is to come. According to the text, the people of this coming prince will destroy the city and the sanctuary.
Because Brother Steve assumes the standard historical timeline, that the Romans sacked Jerusalem and destroyed the Second Temple in 70 AD, he uses that historical anchor for his next massive interpretive step.
Right.
If the people who destroyed the city were Romans, then the prince who is to come must also be Roman.
Exactly. The logic is that the Antichrist must emerge from a revived Roman Empire. Geographically, Brother Steve ties this directly to modern Europe. And ethnically, he insists this means the figure must be a Gentile.
He is remarkably firm on that ethnic point. He actively refutes several popular theories that might be floating around the internet or other churches.
Mm-hmm.
He tells the room, definitively, that the Antichrist is not Jewish, he is not American, and in a highly specific historical reference, he clarifies that the Antichrist is not a resurrected John F. Kennedy.
That is certainly a very specific one to point out.
It is astounding to see him actively filtering out competing conspiracy theories to keep his congregation focused on his specific European timeline.
And that insistence on the figure being a Gentile is further reinforced by his reading of Revelation chapter 13, where the text describes a beast rising out of the sea.
Right.
Brother Steve actually checks in with a congregation member during the lesson, a man named Brother Jim, to confirm the symbolism. They agree that prophetically, the sea represents the nations or the Gentile populations, possibly even pointing geographically to the Mediterranean Sea itself.
But I have to push back here on the underlying logic being presented to you, the listener sitting in that room. It is one thing to read about ancient empires in a text written thousands of years ago. It is another thing entirely to apply them to tomorrow's news cycle. How exactly does Brother Steve logically connect a first century Roman Empire to modern 21st century European geopolitics? I mean, to jump from 70 AD to the year 2026 is a massive chronological leap.
That is a massive leap, and it is the crux of his entire geopolitical framework. He bridges that 2,000-year gap using a concept he refers to as the seven successive forms of Gentile government.
Going back to Revelation, right?
Yes, he turns to Revelation chapter 17, a passage that speaks of seven kings, five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come.
I was looking at how he assigned those seven kings, and it is a fascinating bit of historical mapping. He takes these sweeping ancient civilizations and slots them into a rigid sequence.
He maps the five fallen kings to past historical empires that interacted with Israel. That would be Greece, Persia, Assyria, Babylon, and Egypt. The one is refers to the empire that existed when the Book of Revelation was written, which is the Roman Empire.
Right.
Therefore, the seventh king, the one that has not yet come, must be the future kingdom of the Antichrist. In his view, this is the revived Roman Empire.
He even mentions an eighth kingdom, does he not?
He does, which he attributes to the Antichrist's direct consolidated rule following a supposed death and resurrection. Though Brother Steve is highly skeptical that the Antichrist literally dies and comes back to life. He leans more toward it being a deceptive imitation of Christ's resurrection.
He also links the throne of this figure to a very specific geographic location. He notes that the text mentions a woman sitting on seven hills. Brother Steve identifies those seven hills as the city of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And what is incredible is that he points out to his Protestant congregation that even a footnote in a Catholic Bible agrees with this assessment. He presents that fact as a remarkable piece of validation, suggesting that if even Catholic scholars agree Rome is the center of this apocalyptic system, his interpretation must be rock solid.
So, if you are tracking with the lesson from the pew, you have now been given a comprehensive description of who this person is, what his personality is like, and exactly where geographically and politically he will originate.
Right.
Once that foundation is laid, the next phase of the transcript shifts into the mechanics of his actual reign and the extreme theological consequences for the world during that time.
Let's look at the timeline of that reign, because Brother Steve maps out the alteration of history with startling precision. He states that this European ruler will make a 7-year pact with the nation of Israel, but right in the middle, at the 3.5-year mark, he breaks that covenant.
Exactly.
He brings an abrupt end to the sacrifices, begins slaughtering people who oppose him, and ultimately sets himself up in the temple to be worshipped as a god.
Furthermore, the speaker emphasizes the supernatural reality behind this geopolitical conflict. This ruler is not acting on mere human ambition or standard political greed. According to the lesson, he is directly and literally empowered by Satan. His ultimate overriding goal is to prepare a global military force to fight Jesus Christ at the Battle of Armageddon.
And his defeat, according to the framework presented, will be equally supernatural. The ancient text notes that this king will be broken without human means or without human hands. He is not taken down by a coalition of allied forces or an assassin. He is destroyed directly by divine intervention.
But the narrative does not end with a simple defeat on a battlefield. The transcript includes a lengthy Q&A session at the end of the lesson, and the questions asked by the congregation reveal a deep, almost clinical focus on the precise mechanics of judgment and the afterlife.
That Q&A section is genuinely astounding to read. A congregation member, Brother Bill, brings up questions originating from the church's internet chat regarding the specific logistics of hell. Brother Steve had stated earlier in the lesson that the Antichrist and his false prophet, the associate who performs signs to validate the dictator's power, are cast alive into the lake of fire. Brother Bill wants to know, well, if those two are the first actual occupants of the ultimate hell, where is every other unbeliever right now?
Brother Steve's answer outlines a highly structured, rigid theological timeline. He states that unbelievers from throughout history have not yet gone to the final lake of fire. Instead, they are currently waiting in a temporary place that is, in his words, almost exactly like hell,
right,
where they are held until a future event called the Great White Throne Judgment.
And then comes the second question from the chat, which introduces a concept that is intensely granular. The question asks what kind of resurrected bodies unbelievers will possess in hell, because if hell involves literal fire, a normal human body would simply burn up and cease to exist. Brother Steve replies that instead of receiving the glorious resurrected bodies given to believers, the condemned will receive special damnation bodies. These physical forms, he explains, are specifically designed by God to withstand eternal torment.
Yes.
They're engineered to endure the fire and the gnashing of teeth and to continue existing forever without ever being fully consumed.
The theological precision required to articulate that concept is staggering.
It really is. I am reading this and wondering about the psychological weight of that information. Why is it important for the congregation to know details as specific as who the first two occupants of hell are or the mechanical engineering of a damnation? damnation body.
It is a heavy burden.
Why deliver that level of terrifying granularity on a Sunday evening right before these people have to wake up and go to work on Monday morning?
That is the crucial question. And if we look closely at Brother Steve's own words in the transcript, he addresses his purpose directly. He says he wants to solidify their confidence in the Word of God. By providing answers for every single detail, no matter how grim or terrifying, it establishes a mental framework where absolutely nothing is left to chance.
Every historical event, every geopolitical shift, every human soul, and every eternal punishment has a highly specific, predetermined place in a massive cosmic system.
Exactly. The sheer granularity offers a paradoxical form of comfort. It tells the listener that the universe, even in its most terrifying aspects of divine judgment, is not operating out of control. It is operating under strict, organized divine management.
Which brings us to the modern application of this lesson. We have covered the ancient empires, the composite sketch of the dictator, the precise timelines, and the mechanics of eternal damnation. How does Brother Steve actually want his congregation to apply this immense, heavy framework to their daily lives?
Well, he offers them a specific foundational theological comfort. He tells them explicitly that he wants them to be excited about the fact that God is running history. He reiterates that the Antichrist, despite his terrible world-dominating power, only reigns because God allows him to.
The ultimate message is that God's sovereignty completely overrules the chaos of the geopolitical world.
Absolutely. But it is not just about passive comfort. It is a direct call to action. Brother Steve says this knowledge should motivate them. Knowing the specific horrors of what is coming, they have a duty to speak to other people about the gospel right now, before their friends, family, and neighbors end up, as he puts it, trapped in that system.
It is an urgent mandate to rescue their community from the very timeline he just spent the evening describing in such vivid detail.
And that sense of urgency is crystallized in the final moments of the transcript in a way that is incredibly vivid and almost cinematic. Just after the closing prayer, where the speaker again asks for a shield of protection over the armed forces, a congregation member speaks up with a real-time local observation.
Yes, the final anecdote. A voice chimes in to say that just that day, Sunday, they saw a train traveling east on a local road called Okado, and the train was completely loaded with military equipment. They say everything on it was military equipment. They had to pack up all their armor.
It is a remarkable moment of convergence between the ancient text and modern reality. Brother Steve had just spent an hour discussing Daniel chapter 11, noting that the Antichrist will honor a god of fortresses.
Right.
Which he defines for the room as meaning this dictator will be a military man intensely focused on armed conflict and military might.
Imagine how you, sitting in that room, might feel absorbing that sequence of events. You have just spent your Sunday evening hearing ancient warnings from Daniel and Revelation about a coming global dictator, the alteration of global laws, supernatural wars, and a ruler devoted to a god of fortresses. And then, as you are gathering your coat and your Bible to leave, someone reminds you of the train full of military armor that just rolled through your own town, past your own local roads, just hours earlier. It takes the abstract ancient prophecies of a revived Roman Empire and drops them directly into their local zip code.
It creates a powerful, immediate sense of validation and intense urgency for this community. It perfectly encapsulates the dual reality they're constantly navigating.
I agree.
On one hand, they are dealing with house sales, mission trips to Brazil, and hip surgeries. On the other, they are actively watching the horizon and the local train tracks for signs of the end of the age. The transcript provides a clear window into how ancient texts are mobilized to provide structure, meaning, and a sense of ultimate control in a world that feels increasingly chaotic to the people sitting in those pews.
It is a profound framework for viewing the world. We started this exploration by noticing the contrast between the mundane church announcements and the sweeping timeline of the Antichrist. We moved through the meticulous geopolitical predictions, the intense mechanics of final judgment, and finally to that passing military train.
It is a lot to take in.
It leaves us with a compelling final thought for you to consider. When a community views the nightly news, international conflicts, and even local events, like a passing train loaded with armor, through the lens of ancient, inevitable prophecy. How does that fundamentally change their daily relationship with fear, hope, and their perceived duty to their neighbors? When the composite sketch of the ultimate enemy feels like it is coming to life in your own backyard, every ordinary day carries the weight of eternity. Thank you for joining us for this analysis. We'll be back with another discussion next time.